Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. Well, how would you like it if you could create control of your day? What difference would it make to you if you could create meaningful vision goals and connect your workday with who you really are? My first guest today takes what he calls a holistic approach to master your workday now. I'm going to introduce Michael Linenberger in just a moment. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Coach Joyce Chapman, who says we must focus on developing a belief system that supports the dreamer in you. And joining us around 12:40, we'll talk with leading Canadian business consultant Roy Ossing, whose new survival guide for business leaders, managers, and entrepreneurs says, be different or be dead. We'll find out what that means when Roy joins us later in today's show. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome Michael Linenberger. He's written a great new book. It's called Master Your Workday Now, Proven Strategies to Control Chaos, Create Outcomes, and Connect Your Work to Who You Really Are. Michael's often been called the efficiency guru by business leaders and the media. It has quite a revolutionary common sense approach to workplace productivity. And he's a sought after international speaker and seminar leader. He's considered an expert on workday efficiency and email management. And he's written four top-selling productivity books, including Seize the Workday and Total Workday Control using Microsoft Outlook, which has been the number one best-selling book on Microsoft Outlook for 4 years running. That's pretty good going. His new book, Master Your Workday Now, offers his workday mastery to-do list. And let me bring him on and we can hear all about his philosophy. Michael Linenberger, welcome to the show.
Hi, Vicki. Thanks for having me on. How are you today?
I'm doing terrific. Very
great.
Good. And I'm going to be much more productive this week, right, after reading your book?
Yes, you will.
So you say that, and I kind of thought this when I was reading the book, that think of this, Master Your Workday Now can be described as the power of now meets the seven habits of highly successful people. Tell us a little bit about the book in your own words and why you felt it was necessary to write this.
Yeah, well, you know, I think there's so many different approaches to getting your email under control and your work under control, and everybody's got, you know, different goal-based approaches. And I just found that none of those were working. And I you know, in my business world and in the teams that I manage, it just seems like chaos reigned, particularly these days with all the email that we get. And so I really think there's we need a new approach to managing our now, to mastering our now, to, you know, how we approach work in our now. And it is somewhat an attitude change, but there's some really simple techniques that I found that you can use that'll get you going on that.
So why do most people feel so overwhelmed? You say that typically when people tell you, hey, Michael, I need time management help, they really mean they need task management help.
That's exactly right. I think most people, when they say time management, they need a way to get their tasks under control, and particularly their email. These days, I think email is the number one cause of chaos at work. You think it, you know, it was supposed to make us more productive, and if you're sending email, it does. You know, you can send many more emails and many more communications than you could in the past. But on the receiving end, you know, you get so many requests for action. You know, you can get 50 requests to do something in one day, if not more, just from the incoming email. And, you know, how do you sort all that out? That's the difference now between 10 or 20 years ago. Email is making us busier than we ever have been before. So you need some strategies to not only manage email, but to integrate email into some sort of a task management system so that you can manage those action requests as they come in.
Right. And I was looking at, you know, colleagues often get 400 and 500 emails a day that they're supposed to respond to. And if you work out the number of minutes in a day.
Yeah, it's just not going to work, is it?
It's not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, one of the number one problem that people have with email is that they try to use their email inbox as a task management system. They don't realize they're doing it, but whenever you get an email and leave it in your inbox and say, oh, I'm going to come back to that later and act on it later, you've just tried to convert your inbox into a task management system. And you know what? The tools to manage tasks are not built into the inbox. They're just not there. So you've got to use a real task management system, and I teach people how to do that either on paper or an Outlook if you've got that, or you know, some other system. But there's some really simple principles that you can use to get that under control, and it works really well.
Yeah, I know. In one of my emails, it's a different one from many of my projects that I work on. But I looked this weekend and had 167 emails that I'd flagged for further action. So I'm guilty of doing exactly what you say not to do.
Yeah, we all do that, you know, and it's not hard to break out of it with a couple simple lessons.
So let's get a quick starting point. I know you share a quick starting place in the book. What can we do right now to help ourselves feel a little bit more in control?
Yeah, so I tell people to divide their work, you know, either what's on their to-do list or what's in their inbox. You can do this on paper, you can do it in a Word document, or even Excel, you know, spreadsheet. Just create three separate sections on paper and divide your work into what I call urgency zones. And those are just real simple definitions of how important or how urgent a particular email or task is. And the top one I call critical now. And critical now are those things that are absolutely positively due today. These are not, quote, important, unquote, things. These are things that absolutely must be done today. And so I ask people to identify those, put those at the top of the list. Just doing that one step alone, clearly delineating what's going to keep you from, you know, leaving work at the end of the day or, you know, going to spend time with your family. That one step alone will help you get control of work. And then there's a couple more, which I'll tell you about, too.
Right. And you say on that critical now, if you wouldn't stay late to get that done, it shouldn't be on the critical now section.
That's the thing. What happens with so many people is they create a to-do list, and then they end up with 40 high-priority items, you know, and that's ridiculous because it's become non-distinct at that point. Everything looks the same. Everything looks urgent, and you don't get the important things done. So what I say is keep that list to five or fewer items, that thing that you absolutely positively must do today. And one way to help you do that is if you start to write something on the list, ask yourself, hey, would I work until midnight tonight to get this thing done if it weren't complete? And, you know, most things you'll say, no way, I'm not going to, you know, stay up that late. But there's a few things that are so critical for today that you would not leave work. And that's how you get down to a very short critical now list, which really does identify what those things that are kind of on fire that, you know, that are going to keep you late if you don't get them done.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk to Michael quickly about the other two steps. And I want to talk to you about the way that you look at goals, because you have a slightly unique pitch on that too, Michael.
Yeah.
And my guest is Michael Linenberger. His book is called Master Your Work Day Now. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay with us.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com. And if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce@joycechapman.com. Coming next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, trauma psychiatrist Dr. Alicia Salzer offers advice on overcoming life's most difficult challenges. And longtime 24 executive producer Howard Gordon talks with Vicky about his thrilling debut novel, Gideon's War. Join us February 28th at noon Pacific on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See more at conversationslive.net.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate, making a difference, one word at a time.
I've got some good timber. It's just a question of time.
And welcome back, everyone. We are talking in this segment with Michael Linenberger, who's written a really great new book called Master Your Work Day Now, Proven Strategies to Control Chaos, Create Outcomes, and Connect Your Work to Who You Really Are. Before the break, Michael shared how to get control of your day immediately, a quick tool that we can use right now. And the first step in that was to identify which items are critical now, the top 3 to 5. Then you go on, Michael, you say to identify opportunity now.
Yeah. So the next part of the list, the middle section, is called the opportunity now list. And those are things that you would really like to do today. You know, if you could, if you had the opportunity to get to them, you would do them today. That's the name. But if you don't get to them today, you know, you're not going to freak out about it. You'll get to them the next day or the day after that or you know, even up to a week or so. And that list kind of is your fallback list after you get your really urgent things done. But I say keep that list down to 20 items. Again, the reason why most people fail at to-do lists is they get too long. So keep that next tier down to 20 items. And the way you do that is you move everything else to what I call the over-the-horizon list, which can actually be on a separate page. And you look at that over-the-horizon list once a week. So this is a really good way to create a short action list that doesn't overwhelm you, but does give you laser focus on what's really important and what the next tier of that is.
Yeah, and to get us out of that state of urgency that so many of us live in. As you put it, I was listening to a recording of yours, and you said, you know, most of those urgent things are other people's urgent things,
yeah,
and they're
exactly.
Not really urgent at all. You also talk in the book about, you've defined a workday mastery pyramid that is a little different. It's a 3-layer sequence that you say takes a holistic look at mastering your workday. I wonder if you'd talk about that, the control, create, and connect.
Yeah. So I call this thing Workday Mastery Pyramid, 3 layers. At the base is what I call control. And we've really been talking about that so far. It's like get your urgent things under control so that you can step back a little bit, change your energy from this, you know, oh, I'm out of control, I got to get this done, more into a creative mode of, hey, what do I really want to accomplish today, this week, and in my life, really? And so that next tier up of the control layer I call the create layer, which is the middle layer of the Workday Mastery Pyramid. And that's really about goals. It's like, you know, what do I want to create in my job? And it takes a very different energy. You can't really focus on goals until you've got your work under control. So it's kind of the next layer up. And then the next layer up above that I call the connect layer, which is all about connecting your work to who you really are. So once you start achieving some of your goals and you feel good about your ability to focus on what's important, you know, take this next step up and say, so what's really, you know, how can my career be a reflection of who I really am and what I really want to do in life?
That's what I love about this work, because you don't just stop at time management or mastering your, you know, part of mastering your day is mastering your career and connecting with who you really are. One of the things I want to just say, Michael, is we stress so much a mission statement, a vision statement constantly, and most people start with that. And you say that's the wrong place for us to be starting.
Yeah, so don't start with a mission statement. A lot of people practice that, preach that. I think it's too early. I'm in my 50s and I still don't know what my mission in life is. Yeah, because it changes all the time. You know, your vision of what you want to focus on changes. So don't kind of hamstring yourself by requiring that you identify what your whole life is about at the beginning. I think, you know, let that come organically through time as you have more and more experience. Rather than, you know, focusing on and limiting yourself to a mission statement, I say focus on your goals that are going to change from, you know, year to year, month to month even, and focus on ways to achieve those.
Yeah. I want to talk about how you look at goal setting, because you, again, have a different approach to this. You separate vision goals from target goals, which then ultimately become action now goals when we combine those two. Where do we start when we're setting goals?
Yeah, so I think if any of your listeners have been in the corporate world, I think they're pretty fed up with the idea of goals. What happens in the corporate world, I think they've kind of co-opted, the corporation's leadership has co-opted the term goal, and they've made it into a, you know, this is how you will help us make money kind of statement. And while, you know, you kind of have to go that way, I think what happens with that is we all focus on targets. We say, okay, what's the numerical goal I'm going to reach? I have to, you know, work so many dollars with the sales, or I have to become X efficient percentage-wise. And I think that's a mistake, because what that does is it disconnects your passion about your work and converts it into a number, which is, I think, is really hard to get passionate about. So I say, instead of doing that, instead of focusing initially on the target, focus first on the vision and the passion behind why you're working, or the passion behind that goal that you're focused on. Get that vision statement written so that when you read it, you go, yeah, this is why I'm doing this. I'm really excited about this. And then throw in a target number of some sort, just so you have some focus, you know, to make sure you meet something that you're really after, going after.
And then how do we convert those to now goals?
Yeah, so what I call a now goal is just the combination of those two things. A really clearly, passionately written vision goal, just a short statement that describes why you're going after the thing you do, so you can feel the emotion when you read it. And then combine that with a target, a number of some sort. And those two things together, the target gives you the specificity so you don't get too lost out there. And combine those two together, and I call that a now goal, because it's something that you can focus on now that will get you to where you want to go.
Mm. A couple of practices that I know you incorporate into your day, beginning and end of your day, because I read them in the book. I wonder if you'd share those with our listeners and the importance of doing those on a daily basis.
So say that again. Doing what?
A couple of rich practices that you incorporate into your day, i.e. reviewing your goals and going
right
through them thoroughly. Talk a little bit about why you do that on a daily basis, why it's so important.
Yeah. So, the vision goal, the whole idea behind that is to not only clarify what it is you're after, but it's also to renew in your awareness and your thinking process why and what it is that you're going after. Because we get so distracted by our work that we'll sometimes forget why we're even working or, you know, doing things in life. So I say, you know, after you write a real clear vision goal with a lot of good passion behind it, read it every day. You know, look at your vision goal at least for a 30 seconds, a minute, every day. You might have two or three or five or 10 of them. Scan over them really quickly so that you kind of reignite that passion behind why you're doing the goals that you're doing, why you're working in that direction. And it also helps kind of clarify a little bit, and it also helps you achieve it because it gets you kind of psyched up on the goal again.
Mm. Now, part three of the book, once everybody's, you know, hopefully mastered their day a little, is connect to your work. Connect your work to who you really are. What are some high-level things that we should do first off in that section?
Yeah, so, you know, even if you're in a job that maybe you isn't your first thing that you want to be doing, but you're doing it because you need to, you know, collect the paycheck. Even if you're in that situation, I think we all can find a passion behind the work that we're doing. And a lot of people say, well, wait, my job, there's nothing in there I want to do. I just want to make the money. But I think that all of us can find something really good and meaningful and significant about the actions that we take every day at work, and say, you know, this is helping people, or it's helping my family, or it's helping produce a product which will help people. I think you can always find an angle on your job where it's a positive action that you're taking. And then I say focused on that positive angle, because a lot of us tend to get a little bit frustrated with our work. We might even get a little sarcastic about, you know, why we're doing it. And that's, mm-hmm. that's not a good thing. That'll lead you in the wrong direction. So find that positive angle that makes you feel good about your work.
Right. And for people who are maybe managers or business owners, entrepreneurs, what are some of the biggest mistakes or most common issues that you see that companies make and hindering their employees?
Well, I think one of the biggest ones is when they try to use target goals instead of vision goals. I think a job of any company, of any business, with their employees is to share the vision of the company very clearly with their staff, so that the people working there know why they're working there, why they're doing the jobs that they're doing, and also feel the enthusiasm in the same way that the owners feel about the product they're creating. I think it's really important to share that enthusiasm. We, you know, almost every company has a mission statement, right? But they sometimes file them away into the drawer and they never share them and they don't talk about them very much. I think as a company or even as an employee, you can find a copy of that mission statement, read it, figure out what cool things that company is doing, why it exists, and why the owners are excited about the company, and then try to share that vision. And I think employers should talk that up as well to their employees.
Yeah, it's critical, I think, because you want to know why you're going into work every day.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. And I think we all forget. We get so caught up in our daily stuff that we, you know, we forget to do that.
Yes, very definitely. Well, this is a great book, Michael. What would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, I think the first thing, you know, that vision of that workday mastery pyramid where you had the controller at the bottom, goals in the middle, and sort of a vision-based career at the top, you really do have to start at the bottom, though. You really do have to get your workday under control before you can really put that creative energy into achieving the goals and identifying goals. So while a lot of people say start with goals, I say no. Start with getting your workday under control so you can step back a little bit and focus on goals second. And so, you know, get that workday mastery to-do list in place, those three zones we talked about earlier. You know, it's a very simple process, and within minutes you can have things, you can really reduce your stress level and come back with a creative approach to your work.
Yeah, sounds good to me. I'll take that away, and I'll also take away to stop using my email box as a to-do
list. Right, right. I teach people how to convert emails into tasks so that they get the control of their inbox really quickly.
Well, I thank you so much for being with us. Listeners can find out more about you at masteryourworkday.com, correct?
That'll work, yeah.
Yeah, so okay.
Masteryourworkday.com.
Super, thank you. My guest, Michael Linenberger, his book, Master Your Workday Now, Proven Strategies to Control Chaos, Create Outcomes, and Connect Your Work to Who You Really Are. And you can find that more about that at masteryourworkday.com. Please do stay with us when we come back. We'll be joined by Dream Coach Joyce Chapman. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Action!
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Ever feel like strangling your boss?
You little...
Or maybe you're the boss and your employees make you want to strangle yourself. Drop that noose and tune in or call in to The Boss Show, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150. Hosts Jim Hessler and Steve Motenko, co-owners of Path Forward Leadership Development, will take your calls on everything boss-related, offering deep insights with a dollop of outrageousness. The Boss Show, workplace wisdom with heart and humor. Wednesday afternoons at 5, starting February 2nd.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Click the show's page on 1150kknw.com for the scoop on Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my next guest is our resident dream coach, Joyce Chapman. Joyce, for those of you who don't know, has devoted her life to empowering others, first as a teacher for the California Public Schools, and later as director and developer of an innovative private school in San Diego, California. And for the past, well, let's just say 15 plus years, she's been a consultant, a speaker, counselor, coach, and author. And I have to tell you, Joyce has an uncanny, intuitive way of hearing not just what you say, but what you don't say. And she's a straight shooter. She believes in the power of play and joy. And she wants to awaken the dreamer in you today. Joyce Chapman, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So last month, we talked about clearing some clutter. And we're going to kind of piggyback on that today, talking about developing belief systems that support your new dream, correct?
Mm-hmm. I love to talk about belief systems.
Well, they're very important because they can make or break you.
They definitely can.
So you say that new dreams require adjustments in old patterns in much the same way. If we buy new furniture, we've got to, you know, get rid of some old stuff or move the room around a little to make the new furniture fit. So where do we want to start with this, Joyce?
I think the best place to start is to see if you have any beliefs that may be stopping you. You know, say you have a dream of writing a book, then do I have any beliefs that would be stopping me? And then, you know, take the time to really look at not if you do have any dreams, any not dreams, but any beliefs that stop you.
Yeah.
Start there, you know, because sometimes I've had people say, is that a negative thing to do to start there? And I went, no, that's a clearing out thing. You know, as you said, when you get ready for a new couch, maybe you're going to have to get rid of the old couch.
Most definitely.
Maybe.
I remember when I was, my parents were both very athletic, and my father in particular was almost a professional athlete. I say almost because he had an accident which kind of stopped things for him as far as being professional. But I remember when I used to run track, and my dad said to me after I'd run once and I came in at second, and he said, you know, your teacher, my coach, said you could easily outrun anybody on this track, but you're too polite. And I, you know, obviously as an 11-year-old kid, I didn't understand what that meant. But that's a limiting belief, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
In itself.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't until much later when I was doing some journaling and some scripting, rewrites and all that kind of stuff when you go through this process, that I realized, you know, that some of that had carried over into other areas, because often we received very mixed messages. Yes, you need to be number one, but don't be too pushy. So
I love that you said, and I know I just interrupted you, that you said limiting beliefs, because I don't think, you know, that I don't think we learn that in school, Vicki. I don't think we, you know, somebody stands in front of the classroom and says, okay, what are your limiting beliefs? You know, we just, that's just such a wonderful thing as a dreamer now, wanting to live their dream that they look at.
Yeah. And I found they can be very deceptive, because you can, you know, we do talk about this a lot on this show and on other shows. And, you know, there are plenty of books out there on the bookshelves that talk about limiting beliefs and how they stand in your way. But I found they can be quite deceptive. You can think something is, you don't always realize something is a limiting belief. So how do we challenge our belief systems so that we can turn those around and develop beliefs that support us?
I think one of the best ways is to start with a very simple idea. What do I believe? What do I think? And then take the time, and I'm just so convinced that this works, take the time to sit down and make a list of, you know, what you believe. Make a list of what you think. And then reread that list, and see if there's anything that needs to be changed for where you are in your life right now.
And you know, give us an example of some of those.
Well, you know, your beliefs, like you say, at a young age may be real different than the belief that you might, quote-unquote, need at this age and stage. You know, I believed I couldn't write. I mean, I knew I could write, you know, the logistics of writing, but I didn't believe that I could write anything. I knew I could teach. I knew that I could share. I knew that I was a good communicator, but I didn't think I could write. I had to change that belief.
Okay.
You know, and that was a big change for me, because, as you know, I now have written books, and I have a website, and I have blogs, and all sorts of good things about writing.
So let's talk about developing a support system, a belief system that supports us. And I was thinking about things that we'd need to change other than just, you know, straightforward beliefs, but attitude, expectations, conversations, the way we spend our time. Self-talk, obviously, is a big one. How we feel when we wake up in the morning. What other things should we be looking at, Joyce?
What you said is just so perfect. And it's just like, you know, to really pay attention is probably the key point there. Pay attention if you have any of those things that are going on that you just mentioned. You know, is your inner critic louder than the inner critic needs to be? You know, that kind of thing. So it's like, take a look at, is there anything stopping me? And I know we've said that, but you can't think that enough. You know, is there anything stopping me? Is there anything I want to change? Is there anything I need to add? You know, you talked about attitude, Vicki.
Mm-hmm.
It's like extremely important that you have, and it's just not positive, it's just the attitude that will bring you to where you want to get to.
Right. And changing, I mean, we really have to change a lot of our belief structure if we want to keep doing the same old thing, because as we know, that the old pattern of thinking isn't going to get us to the new level.
Almost always it won't. You know, once in a while a miracle comes in. When I awakened this morning, I thought, okay, what do I believe? You know, what do I want to talk about? Just with a smile on my face, and I went, I believe in magic. You know, and because I believe in magic, I believe that I really can do and have and be whatever I choose to do and be and have.
Hmm. Now, I know that you always encourage playfulness in your coaching sessions. This doesn't have to be all serious, you know, and really super intense. So you encourage a lot of playfulness. Yeah. I know you're a huge proponent of affirmations. You and I were talking, and I said, affirmations don't really work for me. They do for a lot of people. And sometimes I think maybe it's what you're telling yourself. So talk to us about your perspective on affirmations and how you believe that they help us to set a new belief system in place.
I believe that it sets you up to be the person that you say you want to be. And then, you know, you can, as we've already talked about, but replacing an old belief with a new belief and having an affirmation that makes that just feel true to who you are. You know, as I just said, I believe in miracles. I believe in magic. Because of that, I radiate that, and I know that about myself. And so it's like, by saying my favorite affirmation I'll share with you is that I'm happy, healthy, and terrific. It's like, I say it every single morning. And, you know, people that have known me a long time say, you know, laugh with me and say, are you still saying your favorite affirmation? I said, absolutely. Because if I'm not feeling happy, healthy, and terrific, guess what it does for me? It shifts me.
Right.
You know, so affirmations are just, you know, the self-talk that you mentioned before. And sometimes it's programming and sometimes it's reprogramming.
All right. I think I've got it now. I think I can change some of my thoughts around now.
Okay, and that's exciting. Will you tell us about it? Tell us about them soon.
Maybe. Maybe I will. So if somebody wanted to write you, I know you like to leave our listeners with a little tool if they want to use it, if they choose to participate. You say write 10 affirmations of our own on an index card. You know that if I do write an affirmation where I write it on my bathroom mirror in lipstick. But why 10? Why 10? Is there a specific number there? A specific reason?
I think I say 10 because it's manageable. You know, the truth is, if I thought you'd write 100, I'd say write 100. But 10 is manageable. Almost anybody can think of 10 wonderful phrases that they could live by. And that's what it is. You're writing your script. You know, you're rehearsing for what you want to do next.
And my guest previously was talking about his to-do list and goals, and he reads them through every day. And I know that you recommend carrying these around with you, and you recommend reading these daily, don't you? At least once a day.
Mm-hmm. I know it worked because I've done it for so many years that I know that it shifts me. If I'm not feeling that I can be all of who I can be that day, if I read or think about, I sometimes just think about what it is that I believe and what I want, it shifts me. And it's like, you know, one of my favorite lines in my own book is, if you don't have a dream, your life will be about your problem.
So very, dream, very true.
Dream big.
Very true. Yeah. And I know that having talked with so many goal consultants and business consultants, that they all say we dream too small.
I believe that's true.
Yeah.
Now, so when I claimed I am a dreamer, which is an affirmation, which is something I believe, I just couldn't help but smile all day long. You know, it's just like, I am a dreamer. And somebody said, well, don't you think that sort of makes people think that you're a little flighty? And I went, well, if I added, I'm a visionary, does that help?
Joyce Chapman, what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Dream big.
Sounds good.
The favorite words that I love to think about are Helen Keller's, life is a daring adventure or nothing. I just love that thought.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for being with us, as always. You can find out more about Joyce at joycechapman.com. And as she mentioned earlier, she has a lot of books up there. Live Your Dream, Discover and Achieve Your Life Purpose, a step-by-step program. She's got workbooks to support that. Celebrate Your Dream is another book. Celebrate Your Dream Facilitator Manual, Journaling for Joy. She's also got Dream Gift Certificates up there. And Notice the Art of Observation is another series she writes, a meditation book, notice and journal. And she also has a deck of cards, which I know she uses daily.
Yes, I do.
So check her out, joycechapman.com. And if you have questions for Joyce, please do feel free to email them to Joyce. She is more than happy to answer, no matter how big or small they are. And there's no such thing as a stupid question. joycechapman.com. Joyce, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Vicky.
And please stay with us. When we come back from break, we're going to be talking with Roy Osing. I hope I said his name right, but he'll soon put me right on that. His book is called Be Different or Be Dead, Your Business Survival Guide. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
I gotta follow that dream to find the love of me. When your heart gets restless, time to move along. When your heart gets weary, time to sing a song. But when a dream...
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicky St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicky asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Don't touch that dial. You might miss something life-changing. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. My next guest is Roy Osing. He's written a really powerful book called Be Different or Be Dead, Your Business Survival Guide. He's currently president and CEO of the consulting firm Brilliance for Business. Osing brings a wealth of experience and knowledge to the complex challenges businesses face in contemporary global economy. Much more than that, though, I think this book also applies even if you're an employee or a small business owner. There are a lot of strategies in here that people can adopt to suit themselves. Roy Osing, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Vicky. Delighted to be here.
Well, I know you're joining us from Vancouver, BC today. You have a very extensive corporate background. What made you put this book together? What made you write Be Different or Be Dead?
Well, interestingly, I never started out with the objective, quite frankly, of writing a book. I actually was in the middle of doing a number of seminars and workshops around what I call my stuff. And people suggested to me that, it was kind of cool, and why wouldn't I write a book? So I actually wrote a book based on what my customers wanted me to do. So that's how it started out, and now I'm back out promoting it and really having a lot of fun with, as you say, businesses and organizations of of any size, quite frankly, and down to the personal level. I mean, I've been coaching people as a career coach using the same concepts, and it works. So it's pretty powerful stuff.
Yes, and I'm glad to hear you say you wrote this book based on what your customers wanted, because that's part of what you talk about in the book. So I'm glad you practice what you preach, because
yes,
so often companies tell us how you know, they'll say this is what our customer service provides. You're all about serving the customer. So let's kick off by talking a little bit about what you mean by that.
Well, yeah, and so many people think it's semantics, and it's anything but that. I mean, my observation has been that most organizations are in the customer service business. What that really means is they create policies and procedures meant to control a customer transaction, and it's driven by economics, accounting, and those sorts of things. But quite often what happens is the customer doesn't like to play by those rules, and so you get into all sorts of dissonance and upset customer relations when you do that. Really, from where I'm coming from, it should be not about controlling the customer. It should be about creating rules and procedures in an environment and the culture that is there to serve them. And when you look at it that way, it completely changes how you conduct business. I mean, I just read today just a real awesome example. It's an advertisement put out by Zappos, which is the online shoe company out of Vegas. And they've got a tagline here that says, happy to help 24/7. I mean, that says it all. They're in the business of helping people and serving people, not pushing shoes. And when you look at it that way, it completely changes how you create your organization, the culture that you develop, and the people that you hire. So from my point of view, it's let the customer control you. Don't try to control the customer. And just watch what happens. It's magic.
Yes, I've heard terrific things about Zappos. I've never had personal experience, but I mean, the stories are legendary, and I don't think it's all legend per se. I know they have a very strong philosophy there. I want to talk about the title of the book here. You say the herd is growing at a breathless rate. If you're not remarkable, you're common, ignored, and invisible. If you're not different, you're dispensable, which basically means if you're not different, you're dead. So talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, I mean, the whole notion here is that the competitive world these days is growing very, very, very rapidly, and the internet is spawning a lot of new business formations. So they're fueling a lot of that. My observation is you would think that in a highly competitive market that companies would get better at creating a unique value proposition for their clients. The reality is the opposite's happening. In fact, what I call undifferentiation is happening. Businesses, organizations are copying one another. And when you copy one another, it basically leads you to a state of sameness in the market. And from a customer point of view, it's a really frustrating place to be. Because how can they choose who to do business with when everybody's invisible and everybody looks the same? And the metaphor around the herd is really apt at this. You can't; it's just a blur in front of you. To really stand out and really be remarkable, you have to be different. And that's not about competing on price. It's not about providing the same products and services. It's figuring out how you can serve people in a unique way, how you can provide unique things, how you can create unique experiences so that people go, wow, and they remember you, and guess what happens? They keep doing business with you. I mean, it's actually, in my view, exacerbating. We're seeing more and more and more copying. And in my book, I say copying is the enemy of be different, and it really is.
Mm.
It's not always a matter of being better. The issue for me is you have to be different.
Right.
And it's not a matter, quite frankly, of if you will die as an organization. It's a matter of when, because you just can't keep copying.
Right.
You can't keep copying.
And you say that it's value that's really relevant, because there's often this issue about pricing versus value, and you stress value that is relevant to your customer.
Yeah, it kind of goes like this. If you can't provide anything or something that is relevant and unique in the way of value, you're done. And so it's not about copying on price. Price is easy to copy. It's not sustainable, and it makes you part of the herd. Okay, but providing what I call, for example, dazzling experiences through your organization is memorable. People will talk about you. You will be visible, and as Tom Peters says, gasp-worthy. Love that word.
Yes.
Can you imagine an organization that's gasp-worthy? Oh, well, I mean, that just blows you away, gives you goosebumps. Organizations like that are extremely, extremely successful. It's not about what you provide. It's about the benefits and the experiences and the joy and the happiness that you create for your fans. That's the key differentiation in terms of what I talk about when I talk about value.
Yeah.
It's not about what you push. It's about what you create for your fans.
Yeah, not and aspire, not what we aspire to be, because oftentimes you'll see that in company statements. You know, we aspire to this and that and the other, but what are you actually doing?
Yeah. You know, there's a whole piece. I talk about something called the only statement, which is an expression of your uniqueness in a succinct way. If you can create something that says, we are the only ones that... That gets you away from aspirations, and it really lays out the specific promise that you make to your clients in a manner that's unique. And, you know, there's just a whole bunch of stuff around that. Aspirations are fine, except if they don't translate into action, they're worthless.
Yeah.
I mean, the world today is all about how do you execute? How do you execute? And yet... This is one of the biggest shortfalls that I see every day in organizations is a failure to execute. You can't achieve anything through aspirations unless it degenerates into action. People that are passionate and tenacious about actually doing stuff for customers. If that doesn't happen, forget the aspirations. You won't be around long enough to actually fulfill them.
Right. Well, that only statement you just talked about was a great segue, because I do want to talk about that. I know you're actually coming to Seattle to present a workshop on that. But before we get there, I just want to talk about this, because I see this with many of my clients when I've consulted with them. They don't even know what makes them different. So what are some ways they can start looking? You say literally, be bold in your quest to be different. Look everywhere. Look at your business strategy, execution versus content, customer service, markets, approach to sales. What else should people be looking at to try and differentiate themselves?
Well, you know, it's a really hard thing to do. It's easy to talk about, but it's hard to do. But I've created a process that I actually will take people through and literally drag it out of them after hours and hours and hours of work. Sometimes people end up where you exactly described, and that is there isn't any significant point of differentiation. Well, that's a good thing to find out, because now they have to go create it. So I actually start out with the premise that says, okay, who do you want to serve? People quite often, businesses, aren't clear on who their target market is, who the group of customers that they want to attract are, because really a point of differentiation is all about who you're going to be serving. It's not about the market in general. It's about those cluster of people that you want to serve. So what I do is take people through, let's figure out who we're going to serve, then let's talk about the strengths that you have, the competencies that you have, the gaps in the market that exist. Let's take a look at the competitive situation, and then start to work on a statement that kind of describes from a value point of view, what you're going to deliver. And once you get to a point, and it's all draft, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as being done in this particular case, because you come up with a statement, you go to your customer base, and you ask them, is this true? Is this true? Is what I'm promising you relevant? In other words, does it address a compelling need that you have? And is it real? Is it true? Am I being honest in terms of describing that I'm the only one that does that? And, you know, customers will be really honest with you. They'll tell you if you're blowing smoke at them, and they'll tell you that, well, it's really neat that you're unique in this, but it doesn't matter to me. So it's a process of working this thing through and refining it until you get something that's almost right. It'll never be perfect, but at least you can then go and execute it. It generally takes the better part of a day and a half or 2 days to actually get something that's concrete enough that you can actually go out and test in the market.
And how do you most of the people you work with in a small business, not in a corporation because they have, you know, more funds, but in a small business like a one or two person shop, how do they go about getting feedback from customers? What's the best way?
Well, the best way is, first of all, it's a really important issue that businesses have to engage with their customers on a regular basis. If you're not engaging, there's no way you can ever keep up with them. There's no way you can keep in step with them. So one of the ways of doing it, and customers love to do this, is you know, some people call it a focus group. I just call it a conversation session with customers and say, look, I got something here that I'm really bothered about. I need your help. Here's what I'm saying. I'm claiming that I'm the only one that. What do you guys think? Is it true? Does it address? In other words, you have that conversation with, and you will get so much rich feedback that you can take a giant leap forward just on the back of that conversation. You know, don't hire another group to do this. Just call your customers up, ask them for help. Most of them will gladly help you. Get them in a room, give them some coffee, and have a conversation.
Yeah.
It really isn't, Vicki, it is not as complicated as people generally make it out to be.
We love to make things complicated.
Oh, you know what? And I'm a simple guy. I mean, I just want to have a conversation with somebody. And it's amazing what happens.
Yeah.
You know, their pupils dilate and they go, wow, I can do that. It's not complicated. I call it dumbing it down.
Yes.
You have to dumb it down.
Yeah. And there, that's in the section of the book that's called Be Different Business Strategy. And I loved how you dumbed down business strategizing, because so often corporations especially are really bad at this. They make this great big event, this strategic planning event, which everybody immediately goes away and forgets about. You say it boils down to basically three questions. How big do you want to be? Who do you want to serve? How will you compete and win?
Yeah,
I love it.
It's all based on my experience and belief that if you cannot execute the plan, then the plan is worthless. And the way you get to execution is you get through the strategizing, the essence of direction piece, real quick. I mean, I talk about get it just about right, and execute it flawlessly. You will beat anybody else out there who seeks the last 5% of perfection that doesn't exist anyway. And businesses continue to do this. And I look at this and I just shake my head. I mean, I used to go around asking people to see the copy of their strategic plan. And if it looked like, you know, a lot of them look like they've been ironed, they're so pristine, right?
Right.
The plan document, I think, needs to be viewed as a repository of learnings. It needs to have paper cuts on it. It needs to have blood stains on it to show that it's been used. It needs to have coffee stains, right?
Right, right.
Use it to learn, and what I call planning on the run. Get it just about right. Execute, learn, adjust, execute, learn, and adjust. It's an entire new planning model. It's built around execution. One of the things, the question you asked me earlier, how do you get, what are the points of uniqueness that businesses can come up with? Execution is one of them.
Yes. Well, Roy, I want to make sure we get in when you're going to be here in Seattle, and we're at the end of our session here. But another thing you say is leave aspirations out of the strategy room. We kind of touched on that earlier, too.
Yep. Yep.
But I know you're coming up to Seattle. You're going to give a book signing, I believe, and on another day you're going to do the workshop. Do you have the actual dates in front of you?
Yeah, March the 9th in the evening. I'll be at Barnes & Noble at the university. And we'll be doing an hour, and it'll be basically an hour presentation of the concepts and so forth that you and I have been discussing, and we'll have a bit of a conversation about what makes sense there. And then the next morning, I'm doing a half a day what I call only workshop, where we actually go through the material again, and we drill deep down and actually help people create an only statement for their organizations. It's a fun thing. It's 3 hours, and it's generally a really cool experience.
Yeah, very affordable. And there really is some great common sense no-nonsense information in this book, based on Roy Osing's years and years in corporations and consulting. Roy Osing, my guest, his book, Be Different or Be Dead, Your Business Survival Guide. And you can find out more at conversationslive.net if you missed any of that. Or you can call me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617 if you have any questions. And Roy's website is BeDifferentOrBeDead.com. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Thanks for being with us.